Sentencing and Trump's felony convictions. FBI Director Wray resigns, clearing the way for cash. Patel. Silicon Valley execs flocking to Mar-a-Lago with blank checks. ATF braces for a likely rollback of its gun control efforts. What will the vaccine makers need to fork over for Trump to keep Kennedy on a leash? Why is everyone surrendering? Are the powerful abandoning the rest of us? But there's just so much space in an oligarchy. Millionaires got squeezed out by billionaires, and with trillionaires soon to come, any corroded net, even a government safety net, can decay without collapsing. It takes a sudden strong thud like a Trump administration, leaving so many clinging to strands. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Nina Mayfair, Josh Salem, and Marissa. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Farah Siddiqui, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. Our evening news director is the Puzzle Master, Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nate Kapp.
And I'm Sam Bowman. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Nina Mayfair. I'm speaking with Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, about his latest article. It's called DEQ Finds Zenith Energy, Requests New Land Use Statement from the City of Portland. Zenith has a storied history of flouting local regulations. The latest DEQ findings represent a significant setback for the Houston Oil by Rail Company. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Nina. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with us. Your new story talks about the Department of Environmental Quality, Zenith Energy, and the permits the oil company needs to operate in Portland. Earlier this month, DEQ hit Zenith with a fine of over $300,000. Why was that?
Yeah, so this can get into the weeds really fast, but in an attempt to keep it pretty simple, Zenith is authorized by the City of Portland to transport and store fossil fuels as it transitions supposedly to something called renewable diesel at its space at the critical energy infrastructure hub. The land use statement that it has through the city right now only covers its own property, but DEQ, after quite a bit of pressure from environmental advocates, DEQ stopped by those facilities in November and found that Zenith was actually constructed and was operating piping on an adjacent property owned by McCall Oil. And also is operating on a Chevron-owned property as well. So that falls outside of what it is actually covered through the city permit. And that permit also is necessary for the air contaminant permit that it operates under with DEQ. So it gets a little confusing in there, but essentially Zenith was doing operating outside of what it is permitted to do, and so DEQ issued a $372,000 penalty to Zenith.
Zenith got a fine, but they also got a directive to get a new land use compatibility statement, or LUCS, from the City of Portland. What is the significance of this new requirement?
Yeah, the LUCS is a necessary city permit for Zenith as it goes through the process of trying to get this air contaminant permit. It's trying to switch over, again, kind of getting into the weeds on permitting stuff, but it's trying to switch over from a higher tiered Title V permit that allows for higher emissions. And get this air contaminant permit, which will cap their emissions at a lower level. So in DEQ pausing the process and requiring them to get a new LUX from the city, it really throws some administrative hurdles their way. They do kind of continue to keep operating based on some DEQ rules at the moment, but if they were to lose that city permit, it would be pretty difficult for them to get the permitting that they need to keep doing business.
Is there reason to believe that the new city council will look at things differently than their predecessors?
There is. The previous city council was pretty friendly to this fossil fuel company, which is out of Houston, and really kind of appeared to have the wool kind of pulled over their eyes by Zenith's promises to transition to renewable diesel. There's a lot of scientific jargon a person can read through on renewable diesel essentially being the same as traditional fossil fuels, and Zenith isn't necessarily actually transitioning. It's just more of a pinky swear kind of thing. So the new city council, however, during the race, 27 people who were running for office signed on to a letter asking DEQ to delay deciding on the state permit that Zenith is trying to obtain. Four of those people got elected, and some of the other ones, maybe didn't sign the letter, but it does seem like likely that they won't be quite as friendly to this company. It's worth mentioning that Dan Ryan was a big part of pushing through Zenith's previous land use statement, and he did get reelected in District 2 in North Portland. So there's at least one vote that may likely bend towards Zenith in this case. If I can add one more thing, this is all kind of based on if this makes it all the way to city council. The city has kind of argued for a while that this is just an administrative decision, and so there are people through the planning and permitting department who could potentially, despite some of the legal vulnerabilities, could attempt to push through the new LUCS for Zenith, and so it would never even go to the city council in that case. And that's an issue that a lot of advocates are raising concerns about.
You also reported Tuesday on a letter from environmental advocates to city leaders about this potential process. What did they have to say?
Yeah, a small coalition of community groups and legal experts sent this letter to city officials, basically demanding compliance with state law and asking the city to commit to transparency. It's a pretty tough letter. It really outlines some of the legal issues if the city is to attempt to do things through, administrative channels rather than through a public process. The letter starts out saying, we write to put you on notice that environmental and community groups will be watching closely to ensure that the city complies with state law and does not attempt another backroom deal with Zenith. Those city officials, those commissioners in 2022, had a lot of meetings with Zenith that some of these same advocates and others referred to as a backroom deal. The Portland City Auditor later said that Zenith violated city lobbying code in those interactions with city officials. So environmental advocates have a lot of concerns about that potentially happening again because they have seen it already in the past with Zenith.
Why have so many different advocacy groups stayed so engaged on this issue?
Yeah, I've talked on this program quite a bit, and you know, Zenith came into Portland, took over a former asphalt terminal in 2014, and then started transloading fossil fuels in 2017-18, and they have basically kind of promised to do certain things over the years and then failed to do those things, and then just sort of apologized, done some sort of what a lot of people call kind of shady dealings with city officials, flouting regulations. There's a list of infractions that someone at Columbia Riverkeeper, who has been involved in a lot of the legal battles supporting the city, actually, in there as they were fighting against Zenith. They listed 18 different times that Zenith has broken city, state laws, policies, been sued. So there are a lot of concerns. That's not to mention the health impacts of oil by rail and oil trains going through neighborhoods. These are, it's worth noting, predominantly low income and BIPOC neighborhoods that these trains go through, and those emissions are already harming people there. And then the other danger is if there's a derailment, like we've seen in the past, or an earthquake where they store those materials on the Willamette River, that's expected to be a pretty catastrophic event. And Zenith hasn't exactly shown that it's ready to for any remediation efforts that might be necessary.
DEQ also put Zenith's air contamination discharge permit on hold earlier this year, but Zenith still gets to operate in Portland. Why is that?
Yeah, so I actually heard from Michael Locke at DEQ, who said that Zenith, they're currently operating under a Title V permit. It's a higher emission permit, and they're trying to get this air contaminant discharge permit. Again, that's what this land use deluxe is for the next air contaminant permit. He said they can continue operating because there's this application shield, basically. It's an administrative extension due to Zenith submitting a timely and complete Title V permit renewal application a little bit ago. So they have applied for this air contaminant permit to replace that Title V because it's required by the current LUX that they operate under. But there is this administrative extension from DEQ that allows them to keep doing what they're doing. That, again, is worth mentioning, that a tactic often of fossil fuel companies, not just here in Portland, not just Zenith, but, you know, globally, is to delay any sort of accountability on these kinds of things so they can continue doing what they do best, which is, you know, continuation of fossil fuels.
Where do you think the story will go from here?
It actually depends a lot on what happens in the next couple of weeks before the next city council is seated. And I know that environmental advocates, again, sent that letter to the city saying that they'll be watching. So it's really hard to tell what might happen. The city may try to push through an administrative process. The letter did seem to, while it didn't say they were going to sue the city by any means, there was a pretty clear through line about what some of the legal implications are if the city chooses to do that. So I'm not going to speak for anybody or anything on that, but you know, it seems possible that there could be another bit of a fight ahead.
What are the takeaways that you hope folks get from this story?
Well, despite all of the permitting talk and some of the, you know, kind of potentially boring nature of that for readers, or it can be very confusing, you know, sort of the central point here is that Zenith is a fossil fuel company fundamentally. And, you know, there's really nothing, if they promise to transition to renewable fuels, you know, all of the infrastructure that they build now can be used for traditional fossil fuels. There's nothing forcing them. There's no real enforcement mechanism to make them transition in that time. And then some of the dangers still exist with renewable fuels, as far as, you know, earthquakes and explosions or leaking into the Willamette and then into the Columbia River. So one of the more simple I think, concepts to grab onto here is that fossil fuel infrastructure is helps with the continuation of fossil fuels, and environmental advocates are doing everything that they can in light of climate change to stop those as soon as possible.
Where can our listeners read the story for themselves?
The best way to get Street Roots is to buy a copy from a vendor. Now is a great time to support Street Roots vendors. They're in your neighborhoods, and they accept cash, Venmo, and tips. And you can also find us at streetroots.org.
Any final thoughts?
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. That was Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, speaking with me about his latest article. It's called DEQ Finds Zenith Energy, Requests New Land Use Statement from the City of Portland. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Nina Mayfair.
The Media Zillas! It's a bird! It's a plane! It's community radio!
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to start with a word for something that you hate. Remove two A's, and you will have a word for something that expresses praise. Well, the answer is anathema. Remove the A's and you have anthem. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon. We've got the solstice coming up, so for the return of the sun, start with sunlight. Replace one of the letters with an E and S, and rearrange the letters to get two things you might have when solving a puzzle. So again, start with the word sunlight, replace one letter with an E and an S, and rearrange the letters to get two things you might have when solving a puzzle. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh, and when the sun is out,
this has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of December 16th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
Listening to KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined today by the Executive Director of Oregon Arts Watch, Laura Grimes, to get into some of the latest and greatest arts publication that they've got going over there. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Althea.
Thank you for being here. How you doing?
I'm always happy to be here and always happy to talk about the latest arts news that we have going on.
Well, let's not dilly-dally any longer then. The first story we're looking at today is from Oregon Arts Watch. It's titled Literary Arts Opens a New Chapter. This is by Karen Pate. Talk to me about this story.
Karen Pate edits our literary coverage, and she attended the grand opening of their new bookstore. Literary Arts has moved to this brand new space in the Central East Side District. They have 14,000 square feet of space. They have a bookstore now. They'll have a cafe that will open after the first of the year. So it's a really exciting new chapter for Literary Arts, which has been around for 40 years now. And Portland is definitely a bookish community, so it's cool that Literary Arts is growing and expanding and offering a lot of new things for the literary community.
And they're not the only arts org in town making a move. There was another one you wanted to mention, right?
Yeah, All Classical Portland, it's actually All Classical Radio, has moved to a new space in the Coin Tower. They actually had sort of like an open house the very same weekend that Literary Arts did. And they have this spiffy new space that's 15,000 square feet. We'll have a story running soon. We're just waiting for some photos to come around. And Suzanne Nance has done a terrific job with All Classical. It's really a beacon for the classical musicians in town and in the whole arts community. So in this new space, we'll have not only these state-of-the-art broadcasting booth, but it will also have a 100-seat performance hall. They have a gallery space. They have a cafe. It's really an exciting new chapter for them as well.
Another story I wanted to ask you about, this one is from Bob Hicks. It's called The Actors Conservatory, Hale and Hardy and Going on 40. So this is about the professional training school here in Portland, which I didn't know this, that it started in a former dental office those many years ago. This is a really in-depth piece. Talk to me about this one.
Yes, so Bob Hicks, who wrote this, is our executive editor. He's been covering the arts here in Portland since the 1970s. And disclosure, he's also my husband. But we've been following Portland Actors Conservatory for 40 years since they were founded in 1985. Beth Harper founded it all those years ago. Beth has a background in education as an actor, as a director, and it's been really fun to watch this program grow all over the years. They've had several different homes. For the longest time, they were in an old firehouse just south of Portland State, and they were there for years until, oddly, they were evicted by the city of Portland, which in the home, the place is still vacant. So that was kind of a head scratching move. But now, after some other moves in between there, they're now at the Tiffany Center. So that's a terrific space for them. What they offer is they have a couple of different programs. They have a conservatory program where they have a two-year program that's limited to 10 people per class, so they have 20 students for the whole program, and it's an immersive program where it's taught by professional artists, professional teaching theater people. And this the conservatory program is nationally accredited. It went through a rigorous process and received its accreditation in 2008, which is huge because students can receive financial aid. And it's the only accredited, recognized theater program in the state. They also have studio classes that suits anybody who wants to learn theater. So you can drop in for evening classes, for weekend classes, and for like an intensive summer program. They've done camps for younger people in the past, but I think with the space now, they've had to rethink that. But they will continue to grow. Beth Harper, who founded it, retired in 2022, and now the managing artistic director is Michael Mendelson. He was sort of the perfect person to take it over. And so it's such a terrific program. It's nice that it's here in Portland. There's students, the conservatory students, come from all over the United States, all over the world, and a lot of them stay and settle here in Portland and become an important part of the ecosystem. So the Actors Conservatory itself is a really vital piece of the theater ecosystem here in Portland.
I've always been sort of curious what it would mean to go to acting school or acting class, and I do feel like I got a good picture of it from this article.
Yeah, I agree. I like how it talked about how it's really learning a highly skilled craft, and yet to make it work for any type of artwork, that it requires both that discipline and a relaxed approach. You have to, there's a rigor to it, you really have to know it, but then in order to embody it and express it, you have to be comfortable with it.
Well, there's another story from Bob that I wanted to ask you about as well. It's called Oregon Cultural Trust, Giving and Getting Back. Important this time of year to talk about the Oregon Cultural Trust. For people who don't know, can you get us up to speed? What is the Oregon Cultural Trust all about?
Yeah, I think it's really, really important to explain this program all the time because it's really unique to Oregon and it packs such a punch. The Oregon Cultural Trust provides a way that anybody can give to more than 1,600 Oregon arts and cultural groups and like Oregon Arts Watch or like KABU. And then if you can donate the same amount, the Oregon Cultural Trust, you actually receive a credit on your state taxes and get that money back. So you can basically double your donations, give to an arts group, and then donate the same amount to the trust and get that money back on your taxes. And it can be, people can donate $500 for an individual, $1,000 for a married couple filing jointly, or $2,500 for a Class C corporation. Yeah, it's really, like I mentioned, it's really unique to Oregon, and it benefits arts groups all across the state, everybody. So the more that the trust raises, the more we all benefit.
Well, Laura, as we are sitting here at the end of 2024, I'm curious, are there things that you and Oregon Arts Watch are looking ahead for in 2025?
Oh, we have a lot. Arts Watch in particular, we're looking to rebuild our website. We're going to launch that in January, and then we plan to build a bunch of information resources for the entire arts community. We're looking forward to building an event calendar and listings for artist residencies, professional development opportunities, calls for art, grant information, and organization profiles. So we're going to be really busy this next year, plus bringing all of our terrific arts and culture news that our first-rate editors and writers produce every day.
Well, if our listeners would like to find out more about the stories that we talked about or just Arts Watch generally, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can find all of our news at orartswatch.org.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, except that I'd like to wish everybody a happy holidays. May they be merry, bright, warm, and all those wonderful things, and perhaps dry. Perhaps it'll have some sun at some point.
Perhaps dry indeed. Well, Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thanks for having me, Elfie. I look forward to chatting more in the new year.
Till next year. That was Laura Grimes, the executive director of Oregon Arts Watch, speaking with me about some of the latest stories from the publication. More information is online at orartswatch.org. For KABU News In Depth, I'm Althea Bill. Thank you.
tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign.